All right, Rav Ossai, good morning. Let us begin. A good chodesh, a welcome to everyone who's joining us. Beautiful. Incredible zuchus to begin a new, brand new month. Brand new limit, as I mentioned on the voice message. We're going to have a new parak today, Mirz Hashem. We begin by thanking our sponsors of this morning's shir. To thank our Talmud Torah sponsors for the month of Nisan, Frank and Debbie Spector. In deep gratitude to the entire Kehillah, for the friendship, for the achdus, for the community it provides. To thank our Talmud Torah sponsor for the month of Nisan, Baruch Hashem, two Talmud Torah sponsors, Paul and Kathy Pollack, for dedicating all of the Shi'urim and Drashos this month in memory of Paul's father and great-grandmother, Shmuel ben Zachariah, and Cyril Bas Rebdov, and Paul's mother, Sarah Bas Avram. We thank our sponsors for the week of learning, Jack Bennett, for dedicating the learning this week in memory of Captain Jor Barshai, who served and died as deputy commander of the 51st Battalion of the Golani Brigade. To thank our sponsors for the week of learning, Mordechai and Malki Tusk, for dedicating all of the learning this week in honor of Brina's marriage to Aryeh Nirenberg this past Tuesday. In the merit of our learning, may they be showered with all of the Sheva Brachos and all of the Brachos of the Ribono Shel Olam. And a sponsorship for the day of learning today for Lois and Edie Goldberg, in commemoration of the yahrzeit of Lewis and Edie Goldberg, for Lewis's father, Mordechai Ben Lipman Leib. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, all of the neshamas will have an aliyah, the families in Nechama, the chasen and kala, beautiful bracha, and our kehila should be benched in Yerzeh Hashem for many years to come. And well, so with that, let us begin. Beautiful, beautiful daf ahead of us today. I'm sorry. Mamish, just when I think I have everything ready and everything's going, it was so good. Okay, Rosa, with that, let us begin. Let us begin. So we are picking up today's Daf is Chof 20. We have a lot to do today. We are picking up Emir Tzashem on your testament, days 19b. And we are picking up towards the middle of the Daf, Shemen Shel Badodin. It is 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14, 16, 18, 19 lines are from the bottom. So we'll say totally switching gears here now just for a moment and delving a little bit into the concept of muktza. So again, just for a few moments, it's not the sugya, but at least to whet our appetite a little bit. So the Gemara says as follows: Shemen shabadadin u'machasala shabadadin. So if you have shemen shabadadin, is the oil, that gets left over in the corners of the press. Now the truth is, as Rashi points out, the only reason why the Gemara is getting into this is because we just spoke about before, you know, the halachos or the different aspects of the, or the different stages of pressing olives. So what's the status of wine, of oil that gets left over in the press? Or machatzalos shalbadadin. So machatzalos shalbadadin are the mats that are used in the press. So remember again, those are the mats that are used to go ahead and cover up the olives. So what's this? The Gemara says, Rav Asr. Rav says, ultimately again, when we say Asr over here, Rav is actually talking about Muktza. So Rav says, both the oil left inside the vats as well as the mats themselves ultimately are considered to be muktzah. Ushmuel shari. But Shmuel says it's permitted. Take a quick look at Rashi. Rav Asr. The Taltuli Mishum muktzah. The Rav Savak Rabbi Huda ben Muktzu. Shmuel Savak Rabbi Shimon the Lesley muktzah. So Shmuel says we're going to see, again, we're gonna dabble in this today. But in Meretz Hashem, we will spend significant time talking about it at a later time. There's a fundamental machlokas when it comes to muktzah about how something is not muktzah. Essentially, the machlokas is as follows. Does something need to actively be set aside for use on Shabbos? And if it's not set aside, then ultimately, again, it is muktzah. So as we're going to see, that's Rabbi Huda's position. Rabbi Huda holds that essentially everything kind of starts out at a muktzah level. And the only way that Lamai says it's not muktzah is if you're miyachid, is if you set it aside for use. Or do we say that at the end of the day, no, that ultimately that ultimately, again, if something is, you know, normally used, then halacha lamaisa, it's not moksa. So for example, in this case over here, so Rav will say that since the oil that kind of just is left in the vat or the mats themselves are not normally things that people will go ahead and gather up, therefore, by definition, they're moksa. Shmuel says, no, again, there's nothing inherently wrong with the mat, and there's nothing inherently, you know, usur about the oil that's left inside of the vat. Therefore, they're mutter. Weiter. So the Gemara says, Hani karchi dezuzi, Rav asur shmul shar sumagin. I'll say, karchi dezuzi, Rashi points out, are the mats that were used to cover up cargo on a ship. So again, Rav says it's mukta, because Rav says, essentially, you'd have to actively be miyached, set it aside for use, in order for it not to be mukta. And if you don't do that, then by definition, it is mukta. And Shmuel says, no, it's a mat. A mat, by definition, is something that is not mukta. Therefore, you can use it on Shabbos. I remember Nachman. So we'll say, similarly, again, now we're transitioning to Yom Tov. So we'll say, I just want to point out, this is not our mukta sugyas. We'll get to mukta sugyas. But it's just pointing it out, it's just bringing it up over here, because of the connection to the vats or to the olive press mentioned in yesterday's daf. I'm Rav Nachman, so we'll say now, once we started with mukta, we go a little bit weiter. So I'm Rav Nachman says, Eiz Lechaba. Now we're transitioning from Hilchos Mukta on Shabbos to Hilchos Mukta on Yom Tov. So what if you have a goat that is usually reserved for milk, Berachele Gizasa, or a lamb that is normally set aside for its shearings, the Tarnakolas Lebetzasa, or you have a chicken that normally is used for its eggs, the Turi Diridya, and oxen, which are normally reserved for plowing, but tamar de iska, or dates that are usually used for commerce. Rav Asur, so Rav says, ultimately on Yom Tov, they're going to be mukta, because they're set aside for this different kind of use. Ushmuel amar mutar, Shmuel says you can use it on Yom Tov. And just know this machlokis that we're talking about over here, this is the machlokis Rabbi Huda and Rabbi Shimon. We're both say, take a quick look at Rashi for just a moment. Sorry, so no. Take a quick look at Rashi. So Rashi says over here, look at Rashi. Rashi says, Rabbi Huda isle mukta. So we'll say, it's interesting, we'll see this later on, way later on, Emir Zashem Kufnun Vav Amud Beis. Emir Zashem. So we have a little while till we get to the mukta sugis. But Lamaisa, look at Rashi, says, Rabbi Huda isle mukta. The way the Gemara used Lashon is, Rabbi Huda holds of mukta. Now, of course, everyone holds of mukta, but rather the machlokes is into the interpretation of the framework of mukta. So Rabbi Huda holds of mukta, therefore he says asur l'shotchan b'yom tov, ela imkin his mina mi ba'od yom, or Rabbi Shimon Shara. So what says we're going to see, really what this comes down to is as follows. On Yom Tov, for example, and through this on Shabbos, Rabbi Huda holds in general that in order to be able to use something, you have to actively be miyachedit on Erev Shabbos or Erev Yom Tov, which is fascinating. So essentially, every object begins like in a default status of mukta, and whatever you want to use on Shabbos and Yom Tov, you must say, I'm going to use this. And if you're not miyachedit, if you don't actively set it aside for use, then its default is non-use. That's Rabbi Huda's position. Rabbi Shimon, the Lashon of the Gemara, is less lay mukta. He doesn't hold a mukta. Now, of course, he holds a mukta. But Lanaisa, what he does is he has a much more relaxed interpretation of mukta, essentially saying that commonplace items that have no inherent prohibited purpose begin at a status of mukta, and there's no obligation to actively set it aside. Essentially, if it's permitted, by definition, it's not mukta. Hahu tamida de orib. The Charta de Argiz, Rabbi Shimon. So we'll say there was a particular Talmud who was living in the city of Charta de Argiz. That's the name of the city. So he lived in the city of Charta de Argiz, and he paskin in Charta de Argiz like the position of Rabbi Shimon in Hilchos Mukta. Shamti Rav Hamnuna. So Rav Hamnuna excommunicated the Talmud for paskin halacha like Rabbi Shimon in Hilchos Mukta when he should have passed like Rabbi Huda. And 1 second, so the Gemara says, I have a hok Rabbi Shimon Sirulam. But 1 second, so the Talmud was paskining in accordance with the normative halachic opinion, the halachic opinion of Rabbi Shimon. So why does that warrant excommunication? To which the Gemara says, Ba'astre de Rav Hava lo ibay le me abadachi. Because in the city of Rav, they didn't paskin according to this standard, but rather they paskin according to the standard, ultimately again, of Rabbi Huda. Okay, honey cheitalidi chad matzil b'chadmana v'chad matzil ba'arba v'chamish money. So we'll say the Gemara just now, once we spoke about again the practice of a particular student. So the Gemara then transitions. You see, I will say how exciting this is. This is why Gemara, like, it's incredible. It's like a roller coaster. You never know where you're gonna start. You start in one place, then there's a tangent, then the tangent has a tangent, and the tangent has a tangent, and Baruch Hashem. So now the Gemara, once we're telling stories about students, so the Gemara says there were these two students. And we'll say, we're going to get into this sugya also. There's a fascinating discussion that we will talk about later on, which is, if chas v'shalom there's a fire, what are you permitted to save on Shabbos? How much are you permitted to save on Shabbos? So this is a machlokes. So the Gemara just says that once there was a fire, and one student, chad matzil b'chad mana, one student went ahead and saved a lot of food, but it was all gathered in one utensil. B'chad matzil ba'arba v'chamish money. And the other student carried four or five utensils out. B'kamif legi b'plugta d'rabba bar zabda v'rafuna. In reality, ultimately, they're arguing in the machlokes of Rafuna bar Zavda, of Rabba bar Zavda and Rafuna. We'll see that machlokes later on. It's a fundamental machlokes about how much food are you, or how much food are you allowed to save in a situation of a fire. We'll say very, very, very quickly. Chazal were concerned that if we put no limitations on what you could save in a situation of a fire, you may come to go ahead and extinguish the fire. So therefore, Chazal put very strict limitations in terms of how much you are permitted to go ahead and save. We'll see that one of the interesting machloksim is it that you could save as much as you want as long as it's in one utensil? Or that no, there's a certain amount that you're allowed to save, no matter how many utensils that amount is allocated in between is irrelevant. So Miras Hashem, we'll get to that machlokes later on. Says the Mishnah, Ein solin basar batzal ubeitza, elekadesh atun ma'odyom. So we'll say fascinating, fascinating sugya. You cannot go ahead and roast meat, onion, and egg, unless, of course, they are fully roasted. Well, unless they're roasted before the day. Now, we'll say, so remember again, now we're getting into a little bit of Hilchos Bishol. And what the Gemara is saying is as follows. If you want to go ahead and cook food, so that's fine. You could put it up before Shabbos, but it's got to be done before. Well, we'll see what done means. But it has to be done before Shabbos. So we'll say, so remember again, this is going back to the sugi we had yesterday. What's the concern? The concern over here is Shema Yichata. The concern over here is, remember, it's not a concern that cooking will take place on Shabbos. Why is that not the concern? Good, because at the end of the day, we paskin like Beis Hillel, right? And Beis Hillel holds that we don't hold of Shvisas Kelim on Shabbos. So therefore, there's no problem for my food to cook onto Shabbos, for my oven to cook on Shabbos. The concern over here is that if food is cooking on Shabbos, I may come to adjust the heat source. Chazal obviate that concern by saying that essentially your food has to be cooked before Shabbos. So we'll see to what degree. Similarly, you can't put bread in the oven in chashecha right before Shabbos, nor can you go ahead and put biscuits, right? That's a little challah, a little biscuit, on top of coals also to bake, unless, of course, literally yikrum upanem b'yom means the face of the bread will crust over before the day. So that's what the Mishnah is saying is, the bread, the roll, must reach some baking threshold prior to the onset of Shabbos. We'll define in the Gemara. Rabbi Elazar Omer, Kedei Shikrim HaTachton Shalom. Rabbi Elazar says the bottom of the bread must be crusted before Shabbos starts. So the Gemara says, Mishal Shlen Asa Pesach B'taner. Wow, Rosh Chodesh Nisan, and we have a statement in the Mishnah about Karban Pesach. If that's not a kiss from the Ribbono Shel Olam, I don't know what is. Mishal Shlen Asa Pesach B'taner Im Chashecha. So I'll say, what else? But here's what's interesting. So we just said before that halacha l'maisa, if you want to roast meat, let's say you wanted roasted meat for Shabbos, so that meat must be roasted before the onset of Shabbos. Yet now the Mishnah says there's an exception to this rule. The exception is Karban Pesach. Karban Pesach. Karban Pesach, apparently, you're allowed to even lechatchila begin. Obviously, you can't, well, we'll see. You can't begin to roast it on Shabbos, of course. We'll see. But halacha lemaisa, apparently, there's no minimum threshold of cooking that it has to have reached before the onset of Shabbos. And ultimately, again, remember again, this is going back to our Tamid days, Beis Hamokod was the fire chamber. That was the chamber with a large fire that was there for the Kohanim to warm themselves by. So now the Mishnah says over here that halacha lamaisa, you have to start that bonfire before Shabbos in the Beis Hamokod, but that fire doesn't have to be raging. As long as you kindle the bonfire, even if the majority of the wood has not yet caught, that's okay. Tap of chaf, ubigvulin kadeshitochaz arberubo. But that's only if you light a bonfire inside of the Beis Hamikdash. But if you light a bonfire outside of the Beis Hamikdash, you must make sure that the fire catches on the majority of the pyre before the onset of Shabbos. So this is a similar discussion. Just like if you're cooking food, your food must be cooked before Shabbos. Because otherwise we're concerned that you're going to come to adjust the heat source. Shemi chata v'kicholim, you might come to adjust the heat source. And that's going to be a problem of havara, kindling, and bishul, cooking. So too, if you're lighting a bonfire, you want a bonfire for Shabbos. So the Mishnah says over here, no problem. But the majority of the pyre must be kindled before the onset of Shabbos. Because what's the concern? If the majority of the bonfire is not kindled, then halacha lemaisa, you may come to adjust that bonfire on Shabbos, which is a problem ultimately of havara, of kindling. The exception to that rule seems to be the Beis HaMikdash, that if you're going ahead and in the Beis HaMikdash kindling that bonfire in the Beis HaMokad, that all you need to do is start that fire before Shabbos, even if it's not fully kindled at the time that Shabbos arrives. Good. Rabbi Huda Omer, Pepecham and Kolshu. Rabbi Huda says that if you're lighting a fire with coals, if you're lighting a bonfire with coals, then as you don't need the fire to really catch on the majority of the pile of coals, but rather as soon as it starts a little bit, that's okay. Apparently, again, coals, Rabbi Huda felt, are pretty consistent. Coals, once they start, they're not going to extinguish, and therefore there's no concern that you may come to adjust the heat source. Very exciting Mishnah. So Bosai, here we go. V'kama. So now the Mishnah told me that halacha lemaisa, if I need to make sure that my food is fully cooked, essentially, you're not allowed to go ahead and roast meat, onions, and eggs, unless, of course, they are roasted before the onset of Shabbos. So the Gemara says, v'kama. So what does that mean? When you say roasted, what does that mean? Does that mean fully roasted, partially roasted, fully cooked? And Abbas, you understand, of course, that the items mentioned in the Mishnah are just examples. It's not meant to limit this halacha to just these items, right? It's not saying that it's only eggs, meat, and onions. It means that if you're going to go ahead and have food, cook food, that food must be cooked before Shabbos in order to maintain it on the flames. It says the Gemara, how much cooked is cooked? Says the Gemara, we'll say, here we go. Amar Belazam Rav, Kedei She'atzumi Bo'o Yom Kemaychal Ben Jerusai. Oh, the Gemara says that in order to maintain the food on the flame going into Shabbos, what has to happen? The food must be cooked like the food of Ben Jerusai. Who was Ben Jerusai? He was not a chef. He was not a culinary expert, right? Rashi says over here, listim haya. He was a robber. He was a robber. So apparently, I guess there are many benefits to the lifestyle of a robber, I guess. But one of the detriments is you don't really have a lot of time to eat your meals. You're like a shtickel on the run. So Ben Jerusai used to eat his food one-third cooked. One-third cooked. So we'll say, so again, we're not getting into it. There's an interesting discussion. Is it one-third cooked of the cooking of the item? Is it one-third of the cooking time? Let's just, for our purposes today, it's one-third cooked. So the Gemara takes this to mean, now the fact that Ben Jerusai would eat his food one-third cooked indicates to us what? That once food reaches that threshold, it has become edible and therefore is quote-unquote considered cooked. So it's fascinating. It's fascinating to see that the halacha adopts the threshold of Ben Jerusai. But say, isn't this incredible? This is Hilchos Shabbos. So Hilchos Shabbos says, when is something considered to be cooked? when it reaches the threshold that Ben Drusai, the robber would have eaten it. Rabbi said, do you understand what this is? Do you understand the Mussar? This is one of the greatest illustrations. Avezu chacham halomid mikol adam. I'll say every person has something to teach. Right? And from every person, we have something to learn. Okay, so you have Ben Drusai. I'll say if you get an honorable mention of being a thief in the Gemara, that means like you were not like a small-time guy, right? Ben Drusai made it big. Like his picture was in the post office. So obviously, if you're the paradigmatic thief, that means you've made it. You've arrived in the world of thiefkeit, right? Rabbi says, so did you understand yet? He teaches us ultimately what? The threshold of edibility. There's something to learn from every single person, even the greatest thief. So halacha lemaisa, the Gemara says that in order to go ahead and maintain food on a fire going into Shabbos, food must be cooked k'maychol ben drusai. Food must be at least one third cooked. And Abosai, this is halacha lemaisa for us. Again, interestingly enough, these are actually not the sugyas of Bishul. What we're going to get into the sugyas of Bishul in a little bit. But Lamais, I just want to point out something amazing, which is, so now even today, so you want to keep food on your blech. The truth is, it's a little bit different for us with the blech, as we'll discuss. But again, just understand that metric, that food should be one third cooked at the onset of Shabbos, that's this Gemara. It's Marnami, Amravasi, Amrav Yochanan, Koshu Kamaychal Ben Drusai, Emam Mishon Bishulei Nachim. But see, interestingly enough, this isn't just a din by Shabbos. This is also a din by Bishul Akum. So remember again, Bishul Akum, you're not allowed to eat food that's cooked by non-Jews. So there's an interesting halacha. Once food is one third cooked, it is considered to be cooked. So therefore, let's say I cook food up to one third, and then a Gentile, a Nachri, comes along and cooks the rest. That's not called Bishul Akum. That's no longer called food cooked by a non-Jew, because Lamaisa, I, the Jew, brought it to the threshold of edibility. So Michael ben Drusai says, for the Mishnah teaches us, Bishul Akum, we learn that halacha Lamaisa, in order to maintain food on the fire going into Shabbos, halacha Lamaisa, the food must be at least one third cooked. Understand the logic. Once it's one third cooked, we're no longer concerned that you may come to stoke the coals. Why? To manipulate the heat source. Why not? Because you only stoke the coals when you want to hasten cooking because the food's not cooked. But once it's reached Michael Ben Drusai, we consider it to be edible. It's crossed the threshold of edibility. And once it's edible, we're not concerned that you're going to hasten the cooking process. Incredible. Tanya Chananya Omer Kol Shumai Michael Ben Drusai Mutro LaHashoso Al Gabe Kira Ve'Ava Pi She'in Grufa Ukituma. Similarly again, Chananya said, any food that is cooked to the level of Michael Ben Drusai, you are permitted to go ahead and leave it on top of the stove, even if the stove is not garuf or katum. So we'll say, again, we're going to see all of these halachos a little bit later on as well, but let me just tell you them quickly. So the whole issue with maintaining food on an open flame on Shabbos is shema yechata, lest you come to adjust the heat source. So the Gemara says there are certain things you can do to go ahead and essentially take away that concern. What can you do? Garuf. You could remove the coals. So for example, if I'm cooking in an oven and I remove the coals, obviously if I remove the coals, then what? I can't manipulate the heat source. Okay, that would allow me then to maintain food in my oven going into Shabbos. The other possibility is katum. You put a layer of ash over the coals. What that does is it limits the ability of the coals to go ahead and really cook. So what I'm essentially doing is A, limiting the ability, and B, making a simon there, a sign that I'm not going to come to go ahead and manipulate them. This concept is where the modern day blech comes from, right? A blech means I put something over my flame and ultimately I'm covering my flame. I'm changing the fundamental way in which I cook. So the Gemara says over here like this. So going ahead and removing the coals or putting a blanket of dirt over them, of dust, of dirt over them, that allows me to maintain any type of food going into Shabbos, whether it's fully cooked, not fully cooked, Michael Ben Drusai, not Michael Ben Drusai, that's fine, because once I've done something with the heat source, there's no concern that I'll adjust it. However, the Gemara says, once food has reached the level of Michael Ben Drusai, one third cooked, one doesn't even have to do anything with the heat source. One could leave the oven as is. Because again, once the food has crossed the threshold of edibility, halacha lemaisa, we're not concerned that you will adjust the heat source, because already the food is edible. Again, we're going to see this in a bit more depth, but this is like Hilchos Bishul 101. So the Gemara goes weiter. Einos tenes apas. Similarly, again, you can't put bread. You can't go ahead and put bread in the oven. Iboiluhu. So we'll say, unless, of course, the bottom crusted over. That's what the Mishnah said. So the Gemara says, Iboiluhu. Tachton heich de gabe tanur. Odil tachton heich de gabe ha'ar. We'll say, which bottom of the bread are we talking about? So remember, just so you appreciate how they're baking bread. We've said this before. They're taking dough. And they're sticking it against the side of the oven. So when we say that the bottom gets crusted, which bottom are we referring to? Are we referring to the bottom that's the part of the dough that's attached to the wall of the oven? Or is it the bottom, lagabi, the fire, right? The fire is on the bottom. And ultimately, it's what we would call the top of the loaf is facing down towards the fire. So is it the bottom of the bread, which is the top, facing down to the fire? Or is it the bottom of the bread, which we would call the bottom of the loaf that is attached to the wall? Tashma, the Gemara says, Rabbi Lazar Omer Kadei Sheikrimu Panel Hamidubakin Betana. Therefore, Rabbi Lazar comes along and says that, again, at what point in time is bread considered to be baked, that you could maintain it in the oven going into Shabbos, when the bottom of the loaf is crusted over, and ultimately that's considered to be baked. So we see that it's the bottom that is attached to the wall of the oven. Good. Mishal Shlen Sapasach. So I must say, amazingly enough, after the Mishnah goes ahead and says that in order to maintain your meat in your oven going into Shabbos, what has to happen? You have to go ahead and halacha l'maisa, have it cooked, k'maychol ben drusai. Then in the next breath, the Mishnah says, but Karban Pesach, you could roast in Shabbos. Or so we'll say, so just so you play this out, this would be a case where Erev Pesach was Shabbos, you went ahead and you shechted your Karban Pesach on Shabbos. So normally I would think that, so the Mishnah is therefore telling me that Allah Chalamayisi, you could begin to roast the Pesach, mamish, like right at the onset of Shabbos. Obviously you have to start before Shabbos, you can't roast the Pesach on Shabbos, but apparently Karban Pesach does not have to be 1/3 cooked at the onset of Shabbos. So why is that? My time, Mishum de Bnei Chabura's reason. So we'll say that is because Karban Pesach is eaten in a Chabura. But we'll say in general, when do we assume that people make mistakes? People make mistakes when they're alone. It's an incredible mussar in general. Right? This is why it's so important to be part of a Chabura, even if it's an online Chabura. Right? This is why it's so important to have Chaverin, even if you're only seeing them through Zoom, right? Because Lamaisa, when you are part of a chabura, we work together. We're mizaris each other. We encourage each other. We're mechazik each other. When you're alone is when you make mistakes. Incredible mussar. But so again, Karban Pesach is always consumed in a group. So because it's consumed in a group, therefore halacha Lamaisa, if one person is going to adjust the flame, what's going to happen? The other guy's going to say, don't do that. He's going to remind him. I mean, he may yell at him, whatever. People have different ways of going ahead and reminding each other of different things. But Lamaisa, there's someone else there who's there to go ahead and remind me if I'm about to do something wrong. So the Gemara says, halav hachilo. So it's interestingly enough, and without a chabura, it would be problematic. V'hamar mar, but we learned in yesterday's daf, gadya, bein sarik, bein lo sarik, shapidam. Remember, we learned yesterday, or 2 days ago, that halacha lemaisa, in general, when cooking the meat of a lamb, we're not concerned that someone's going to open up the oven and adjust the heat source. Why? Because the draft is bad for lamb meat, apparently. So isn't that enough of a reason why a person is not going to adjust the heat source? To which the Gemara says, no. Hasam minsach hachalom minsach. When is a draft bad for lamb meat? That's only if the lamb is cut up into pieces. But remember, Karban Pesach is roasted whole. And because it's roasted whole, therefore halacha lemaisa, the draft has no impact. And therefore, halacha lemaisa, there could be a potential problem. The reason why there's not is because chabura. We'll say that's the musar. Always be part of a good chabura. Always be part of a good group of people. Because lemaisa, what happens? Bnei chabura zrizenhein. The members of a chabura, they're zoriz. They're careful. And if they see one of the bnei chabura going ahead and doing something wrong, they'll remind him that what he's about to do is incorrect. Beautiful. Umachiz and asar. So we'll say, so remember again, the Mishnah said that in the Beis HaMokad, which was the fire chamber in the Beis HaMikdash, where they had the large bonfire, halacha lemaisa, all you needed to do before Shabbos was what? Ignite the bonfire. ignite it. It doesn't have to cash the majority of it. You just have to go ahead and ignite it. So says the Gemara, Minhani Mili, from where do we know this? So we'll say contrast this with a bonfire kindled outside of the Beis HaMikdash. That bonfire, if you want to kindle it outside of the Beis HaMikdash, the fire has to really catch in the majority of the bonfire. So why is the bonfire in the Beis HaMikdash different than the bonfire outside of the Beis HaMikdash? So Minhani Mili, Amrav Huna, Lo Sevar Eish B'chom Moshe Zechim B'yom HaShabbos. So the Pasuk says, you may not kindle a fire in all of your dwellings on Shabbos. So the Gemara makes an incredible drasha. B'chom Moshe Zechim I'atamavir, Aval Atamavir B'meduras Beis HaMokad. This is wild. So the Gemara says, you can't kindle a fire. You can't kindle a fire inside of your homes, right? Inside of your homes. But in the Beis HaMikdash, you can kindle a fire, which sounds like what? So Maskev L'Rav Chista Yihachi Afilo B'Shabbos Nami. So you're telling me, so if that's the case, then I should be able to light this bonfire in the Beis HaMikdash even on Shabbos, which of course I both say you can't, we know you can't do. You could do certain malachas on Shabbos in the Beis HaMikdash, like Shechita. They would slaughter animals, they would offer up karbanos, but L'maisa, they would not be kindling the bonfire on Shabbos. So Rav Chisda says, no. That pasuk is actually coming to go ahead and permit the burning of fats and limbs. That if on Friday night you had leftover fats and limbs from that day's sacrifice, halacha lemaisa, you would be permitted to burn that on the mizbeach on Friday night, on Shabbos night. So what about the bonfire? So the Gemara says, ukohanim's reason, hein? So ultimately, I will say, why could you light the bonfire? Same idea. Kohanim are zariz. We assume that kohanim are especially careful with halacha, and especially inside the confines of the Beis HaMikdash. And therefore, again, remember, the whole concern about the bonfire is that we're nervous that if the fire doesn't catch the majority of the bonfire prior to Shabbos, one may come to adjust the logs or adjust the items and cause an act of kindling on Shabbos. But because Kohanim, first of all, they're not there alone. There's a bunch of Kohanim there. So you have the idea of B'nei Chabura's reason in who, coupled with the fact that in general, Kohanim's reason. Kohanim are generally considered to be of a higher level of Zrizos. We're not concerned that they're going to come to go ahead and kindle a fire on Shabbos. Beautiful. But outside of the Beis HaMikdash, if you want to light a bonfire on Erev Shabbos. So we'll say, I guess where this comes up, by the way, in a serious, just thinking about this now, is if, let's say, you want to light a fire in your fireplace on Erev Shabbos. You want a fire in your fireplace for Shabbos Kodesh. So again, what level of kindling is necessary prior to the onset of Shabbos? So remember, the Mishnah said that outside of the Beis HaMikdash, the fire must go ahead and catch on the majority of the bonfire before Shabbos starts, or the majority of the pyre, we'll call it. My Rubens will say, what does that mean, that it has to catch the majority? Amarav, rov kol echad ve'echad. It means it must catch on the majority of every log. Of every log. So every piece of wood you have, the fire must have caught fire on the majority of that piece of wood prior to the onset of Shabbos. So the Gemara says, Shmuel Amar, Shmuel says, Kedei Shlo Yomru, Hava Itzim Minaniach Tachteyen. Shmuel gives a little bit of a more amorphous definition. He says, the fire must have caught enough so that no one's going to say, let's bring more wood. In other words, it has to be raging enough that it's clear that it's a sufficient fire, then no one's going to say we have to bring more wood for this fire. So the Gemara says, Tani Rabbi Chiya l'siyu de Shmuel. So Rabbi Chiya brought a support to Shmuel. And what did he say? Kadei shetehe shal heves ola me'eleha, v'lo shetehe shal heves ola al yidei acher. That it will say, ultimately, again, the fire must be strong enough that the flame is kind of self-sustaining, and that the flame does not need to be fed ultimately again by anything else. So we'll say such a profound statement. It's not just a din in Shabbos, it's a din in life. What's the goal in life? Shetehe shal heves ola me'elah. The goal in life ultimately is that the flame of ruchnius, right, our personal flame of spirituality, needs to be a self-sufficient flame. V'lo shetehe shal heves ola al yidei acher. So I say, so many times in life, when it comes to our ruchnius, we outsource our spiritual success to others, right? I need this person to inspire me. I need this person to do this. I need this person to do that. I need this. I say, at the end of the day, there's only one person who is responsible for your ruchnius. Only one person who is responsible for your flame. And that is you. The ultimate goal in life is shetehe shalheves Ola me'ilecha. That my flame has to be a self-sustaining flame, has to be a self-fed flame, that my personalistic bonfire of holiness has to be something that I create, that I take responsibility for, and not that constantly has to be fed by external sources. An incredible, incredible yisod. But back to Hilchos Shabbos. Eitz Yechidi, we'll say, what about halacha l'maaseh, all I have is one piece of wood on my bonfire. So what's the halacha there? Rav Amar Rov Avyov. So Rav says that ultimately, again, the fire must take in the majority of the thickness. Va'armeli barof hakeifo. Others say the fire has taken on the majority of the circumference. Amra Papa Hilchoch Ba'inan Rov Avyov or Ba'inan Rov Hakeifo. So therefore, Papa says we need both. So therefore, we'll say if you're making a bonfire and you have logs, you want the fire to go ahead and permeate the majority of the thickness and the majority of the circumference. Kitanoi. And was in reality, this is a machlokes tanoim. Because what did we learn? The Gemara says, Rabhiya Amar Kadeshi Yishchasa Ismulachasa Uman. Subhiya says that the fire is an interesting definition. The fire must take in the log enough that the log is no longer usable for a craftsman. That a craftsman would not be able to go ahead and use this for anything. Rabbi Huda says the fire has to take hold of the log from both ends. So the Gemara says, "Afa pishin raya ledavar zeicha ledavar." And even though there's no raya, there's a scriptural allusion. If the fire takes hold of the two. If the fire takes hold of the two sides, right, and the fire goes ahead and eats the interior, could the wood be used ultimately for type of malacha? Good. So what I say, the idea being halacha lemaisa, the fire must take in the, if you're lighting a bonfire outside of the Beis HaMikdash, the fire must take in a way that we don't have a concern that you are going to come to go ahead and manipulate the fire. That's the idea. That's the idea. In the Beis HaMikdash, we're not worried about fire manipulation, because Kohanim's reason. But outside of the Beis HaMikdash, we do have to be concerned. So the Gemara says, Va'ach lefanam mevu'eres. So the Gemara records the pasuk from Yirmiyahu. Ve'es ha'ach lefanam mevu'eres. So my ach. So we'll say, it says literally the ach was burning in front of him. What is ach? Says the Gemara. Amarav achavna. So Rav says achavna. We'll say achavna are willow branches. And Shmuel says, ultimately, again, it is pieces of wood that are literally burnt, that are bundled together, or that are put together, large pieces and small pieces, and one kindles the other. One time somebody was selling wares, and he said, who wants to buy a chavna? No one knew what a chavna was. Ishtachach arafta. And it turned out that he was selling aravas. Amar Rav Huna, kanim ein tzrichin rov. So Rav Huna said, if you're burning reeds, so it says, let's say I'm lighting a fire of reeds on Erev Shabbos, the fire need not take hold of the majority of the reed prior to the onset of Shabbos. Why is that? Because again, apparently when it comes to reeds, once you kindle it a little bit, the rest of it really automatically ignites. Ogdam, this is very interesting. If you bundle the reeds together, tzrich and rov, so and you're going to now ignite the bundle. So halacha l'maisa, the majority of the bundle must be kindled at the onset of Shabbos. And I will say this is fascinating. Rashi says, why is this? Because when the reed is by itself, we know the fire is going to take. When there's a bundle, the concern is sometimes reeds were bundled very tightly and the fire would not be able to get into the bundle. So if you're kindling a bundle, the majority of the bundle must be kindled before Shabbos. But halacha l'maisa, if you're bundling a single reed, that need not be bundled, that need not have the rov before Shabbos. So gar'in, and similarly again, if you are igniting seeds, right, or really pits is the better word, like olive pits, they used to burn. So it's gar'in and ein tzrichin rov. So we'll say if you're burning olive pits, the majority of the pit need not take fire, need not be kindled at the onset of Shabbos. We're not nervous. Meaning once you ignite the pit, the whole thing is gonna take. However, bechoslos, if you put a bunch of pits in a basket, then there's a concern that halacha l'maaseh, maybe the fire won't get in between, because then the pits would be more tightly packed. Maybe the fire is not going to get in there. Therefore, you do require rov. Maskif Rav Chista Adrabo. I would have thought just the opposite. Ibra Mistabra. Kanan mevadron Agdan lo mevadron. I would have felt like this. You know, if you have loose reeds and you just put it in together, I might have thought there you do need the rov. You do need the majority of the pile to be lit, because at the end of the day they could scatter. They could scatter. But if they're bundled, they can't scatter. Similarly, garinan mevadron, nustan bechosos lo mevadron. Pits could scatter also, but if they're put together in a basket, they can't scatter. So here what the Gemara is saying is, I would have thought just the opposite. I would have thought that when these items are bundled or put in a pit, that's dafka when you don't need the majority of the pyre. I'm using the word pyre loosely, you understand. The majority of the pyol or the pyre to catch flame. But when they're individual, I would require it to catch fire. To which the Gemara says, Itmar nami, Amad Beis, Amrav Kahana, Kanim Sha'agdan Tzrichin Rov, Lo Agdan, Ein Tzrichin Rov, Gar'inan Tzrichin Rov, Nostan Bechoslos, Ein Tzrichin Rov. So we'll say, okay, Se'inach Inami, you're right, it's a machlokes, too difficult yourself. So you see over here that according to, Rav Kahana comes along and supports this idea. Rashi says, Rav Kahana Amar Kanim Sha'agdan Tzrichin Rov. So Kirafuna Dolo Ayali Bahenura. So once they say again, you see that as much as intuitively, I would have thought that bundled reeds would have less of a probability of kindling, and basketed olives would have less than a concern of bundling. We see again that's not true. The individual reed, once you ignite it, we know it's gonna take flame. It's gonna be kindled. When you bundle things, the concern just is that the fire does not reach. It's harder for the fire to spread. And therefore, again, if you're bundling or basketing, the fire must go ahead and take hold of the rov, of the majority of the item. If you're kindling individual seeds or individual reeds, once you ignite one part of it, you don't need the rov, but we assume that it's going to go ahead and ignite the rest. Beautiful. So the Gemara says as follows, Tani Rav Yosef, Arba Meduros Ein Tzrichin Rov. There are four different types of bonfires that do not require rov. So we'll say, so just understand what this means. There are four types of heat sources, of fire sources, that if you kindle them, we know that they're going to ignite, and therefore you don't need the majority of the pyre to ignite prior to the onset of Shabbos. What are they? Shel Zephes, pitch, gafris, sulfur, gvina. This is very interesting. So apparently their cheese was very fatty, oily, and therefore it burned. So apparently if you made a cheese fire, so the mice again, you could be pretty sure that's going to burn well. V'shel rabav, or of grease. Grease. So if you make a fire out of any of these items, I guess they were highly flammable. So there was no concern about being extinguished or having to go ahead and manipulate it. So if you made a bonfire out of any of these, you don't need the majority ultimately to be kindled before Shabbos. Rather, as long as you ignite it in some way, that is enough. Tana, af shalkash v'shalgaba. Others say this applies to straw and stubble as well. Am Rabbi Yochanan, Eitzin shal Bavel in Tzrichin Rov. Similarly, Rabbi Yochanan says, the trees of Bavel do not require rov. Same idea, highly flammable. Therefore, once you go ahead and ignite it, you don't have to be concerned that you're going to have to stoke it. Maskif la Rav Yosef, Mahi. By the way, what is that? What are the trees of Bavel? Ilema silsi. See, if you want to say ultimately again, it's small strips of wood. Rashi says silsi is la'achar sha'asom itim dakim or bavahaynogin. So this means that these are just small strips of wood that you are putting together in a pyre. So the Gemara says, my ilim is silsi, hashta psila amar ula, hamadlik tzarch shiyehe barov, hayote, silsi mibai. So we'll say again, if you have small pieces of wood, so we'll actually see this a little bit later, Ula says that halacha lemaisa, if you're lighting a wick, the majority of the wick must take the flame prior to Shabbos. So why would a small piece of wood be any different than a wick? Amar Rav Yosef, Shucha da'arza. So rather, Rav Yosef says, what is this? What is this? What are these trees of Bavel? Shucha da'arza, Rashi says, Yaveshu vidak v'yesh kamen semer ben klipa li'etz v'hu ma'vira. So we'll say, so apparently in a cedar tree, when you go ahead and you peel back the bark, there's some type of woolly substance that is there. So apparently, again, that's highly flammable. So therefore, if you ignite that, you don't have to have the fire take on the majority of the kindling. And therefore, halacha lamaisa, it'll be okay. Halacha lamaisa, you can go ahead and just as long as the fire is kindled in it, you don't need the majority. Right? Bar Abba Amar Zaza. He says this refers, Zaza, we'll say it literally translates as moss. That apparently moss can be highly flammable as well. Actually, going to speak about that in the next parak. And therefore, again, as long as you ignited it, you don't need the flame to take hold of the entire thing of moss. Incredible. We'll say, Hadrun Alach Yetzios HaShabbos. So we'll say Mazel Tov, Mazel Tov. The truth is, this is the first parak that we've completed in this current matzav. Every completion of every parak is an incredible accomplishment, but the fact that we haven't stopped our learning. There's been an interruption in so many other things in life, but there's never an interruption in the daf. There's never an interruption in Talmud Torah. We're going to finish, we're going to go. We'll say a special Mazel Tov, an incredible Mazel Tov, and Yesha Koach to all of you. We'll say, okay, with that, enough of the celebration. Let's go weiter. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech Olam Shehakol Nehiyeh B'dvaro. So what's with that? Let's go back there. Incredible. Look at this parak. Bameh Madlikin. So we'll say, this parak should be a kapara for all the times that we never really say Bameh Madlikin on Friday night. Right? We go ahead and whatever we're doing during Bameh Madlikin, suddenly everybody loves Tehillim or everybody's doing Shnayim Mikra, anything but Bameh Madlikin. So we'll say, so this should be a kapara for all the times that we didn't say Bameh Madlikin. So here we go. So we'll say, so now we get into the halachos concerning what can you kindle on Shabbos and with what. So we'll say, so remember, there's two different conversations over here. So we'll say, as we're going to see, there's a discussion about wicks and a discussion about oil. So b'meh madlikin u'b'meh ein madlikin. Rashi says over here, la'asos psila. So now the first topic of conversation is, what type of items can be used for a wick on Shabbos? What type of items can be used for a wick? So let's see. The Gemara says, "Eimadlikin." So just let's talk about this outside for just a moment. So the idea over here is as follows. The idea over here is that in general, you can only use a wick on Shabbos that conducts, I don't know if conduct is the right word, but that draws the oil in an uninterrupted way. What we're concerned about in halacha is that if you have a wick that doesn't really properly draw the oil, you may come to adjust that wick on Shabbos. Adjusting the wick on Shabbos, and again, remember, causes kindling, right, or enhanced kindling. Causing enhanced kindling ultimately is havara, is one of the lametes melachos, one of the 39 prohibited categories of melacha. If done inadvertently, is chiyuv chatas, and chas v'shalom done intentionally, is an iser kares. So therefore, or sumisa. So the Gemara says, "Mamadikin, mamadikin, eimadikin." So we'll say we're not going to define these items now. We're just going to define them in the Mishnah. Eimadikin lo belechesh, v'lo bechosen, v'lo bechaloch, v'lo bepsilas ha'idon, v'lo bepsilas ha'midbar, v'lo biroka apnei hamayim. So we'll say, we're going to define all of these items in the Mishnah itself, in the Gemara itself. So we'll say, so you can't use any of these items. What's the common denominator amongst all these items? They don't conduct the oil well. They don't draw the oil well. So if you were to use any of these items for a wick, the flame itself would flicker. If the flame flickers, we're concerned that one may come to inadvertently adjust it on Shabbos, which of course halacha lamaisa will be aser. So the first conversation is wicks. Now we transition ultimately to what? To oil. Velo bezefes, you can't use pitch. We'll define these words. Velo b'shaiba, you can't use wax. Velo b'shemen kik, you can't use kik oil, which we'll discuss. Velo b'shemen sreifa, you can't use burnt oil. Again, we'll define all of these items in the Gemara. Velo b'alyo, and not with fat. Alyo usually means fat that comes from the tail of an animal. Velo b'chelev, not from regular fat either. Nachum Hamadi Omer, malikin b'chelev mevoshel. Nachum Hamadi says you can use cooked fat for oil. The chum say echa mevoshel ve'echad she'ena mevoshel im malikin bo. Chum say whether the fat is cooked or whether the fat is not cooked. Halacha lemaisa, you cannot go ahead and use it for hadlaka. So we'll say let's define our terms. Says the Gemara lechesh. What is lechesh? So remember again, shuchat de arza. Shucha d'arza. So we'll say, look, if you look at Rashi, so Rashi says Shucha d'arza ultimately again is the bark of a cedar tree. Bark of a cedar tree. The Gemara says, Shucha d'arza, it's ba'amu. What are you talking about? Of course, how would you possibly use bark as a wick? You can't use bark as a wick. To which the Gemara says, no. Be'amrinisa de'ispe. So we'll say, apparently, again, as we mentioned before, when you pull back the bark of a cedar tree, so apparently, again, there's some type of woolly substance that is in that, and halacha l'maisa, that could be used as a wick. So therefore, the Mishnah tells me that halacha l'maisa, I can't use that because apparently it does not conduct the flame well. V'lo b'chosen, what's chosen? Am Rav Yosef ne'uras shal pishtan. So we'll say this is some part of uncombed flax. Only Abaye, v'hak siv, v'haya chosen l'na'ores. So we'll say, it says chosen could be used for kindling. Mechlal de chosen lav ne'ores ninu. So we'll say it sounds like ultimately chosen and ne'ores are two different things. But rather, again, it is flax that is beaten, but not combed. So we'll say, again, these are all, the common denominator amongst the items being mentioned in the Mishnah is that halacha l'maisa, they cannot go ahead and conduct the flame well or draw the oil well. V'lo b'chaloch, Amr Shmuel, shaltinu l'chon l'chusei yama, v'amru kul choshmei. So Shmuel said, I asked all of the sailors, and they told me it's not called kalach, but rather it's called kulcha. Okay. Rav Yitzchak, we still don't know what it is. Rav Yitzchak bar Ziri amar gushkara. Rav Yitzchak bar Ziri said, what is it? It's called gushkara. Now Rashi says, gushkara is psoles shalmeshi ha'asi kikovam. So we'll say, interestingly enough, gushkara is like leftover silk. I guess when you create silk, when you make silk, there's some of the leftover material. That leftover material, which is of a compromised quality, that's gushkara, leftover silk. Gushkara, Rabin Ba'abaye, Haviyosi Kamei Deravna Nechemya, Achur Reish Lakish. So Rabin and Abaye were sitting in front of Ravna Nechemya, who was the brother of the Reish Kalusa. Chazye, the Havalavish Matkasa. They saw that he was wearing Matkasa. So Matkasa, as she says, is Lavush Ha'osemi Oso Kalach. So we'll say Matkasa is a garment made out of kalach. Kalach is gushkara. So they saw him wearing clothing made out of this type of, leftover silk. Leftover, well, from when you fashion silk, the stuff that's left over after you fashion the silk. Amalei Ravan Abaye Hanukalach. So Ravan got very excited. He said to Abaye, oh, look, he's wearing kalach. This nun, he's wearing the kalach that we learned about in the Mishnah. Amalei Anon Shira Pardana Karinalei. We don't call it kalach, but rather we call it Shira Pardana. That's what we call it. Meisvei Hashirain Vahakalach Vahasvikin Chayavim Betzitzis. But I will say, you see in the Braisa over here, that Shiraim and Kalach and Srikin are mentioned separately. So you see, Shiraim means the leftover silk. Kalach, we were saying, also means the leftover silk. So Kalach can't be leftover silk if that's called Shiraim. To which the Gemara says, Tiyufta. Enoch Inami, you're correct. So that Kalach must mean something else. That's one possibility. The other possibility is, Ibais Ema, Shira Lochod, Vishira Parnada Lochod. The other possibility is, Shira is one type of leftover silk, and Shira Parnada is another type of silk. Okay, so it's a bottom line for our purposes, is Kalach is the leftover residual material after you have gone ahead and made silk. For Lobe Psila Saidon, you can't use Psila Saidon as a wick. What is that? So the Gemara says, Achvina, that's an Arava. Willow. You can't use willow branches as wicks on Shabbos because they don't draw the oil well. Let's just do one more line. I'll say, Ravin Ba'abaye Havaka Azli Bepiska de Tamarisa. So we'll say, Ravin and Abaye were traveling in the valley of Tamarisa. Chazinhu Lahano Arafta. They saw a certain type of willows that were growing. Amrli Ravin La'abaye Hainu Idon Disnan. So we'll say, Ravin said to Abaye, this is the Idon that we learned about in the Mishnah. So we'll say, so remember again, the beauty of Talmidei Chachamim and living a life of Torah is that wherever you go, you see Torah. So some people walk in a valley, they see willow branches, and they say, okay, those are willow branches, or it doesn't even register. Other people walk in valleys, they see willow branches, and what do they say to themselves? Oh, that's Idon. That's Idan. That's Idan of the Mishnah. That's the willow branches of the Mishnah. Amar Lei, to which Abai says, Rav, no, Hahi Eitz Ba'alma. Right? Ultimately, again, that's not the willow branches of the Mishnah. That's just a regular tree. So what happened? Kalaf Ba'achli Lei, Amenisa de Beni Beni. So he went ahead and he peeled back. So apparently Ravin took the willow branch. He pulled back the willow branch, the outside of the willow branch, and they saw some type of woolly substance inside of it. So interestingly enough, it's not the willow branch itself that halacha lemaisa is the wick, but rather again, it's the woolly substance inside of the branch that ultimately serves as the wick. So we'll stop over here for today. A mazel tov on the new parak. We'll stop here. Good day. Wishing everyone a good chodesh. I'll just tell you very quickly in the 30 seconds that we have. You know, the Mishnah in Maseches Rosh Hashanah says that Rosh Chodesh Nisan is Rosh Hashanah l'malachim. Ultimately, again, it's the Rosh Hashanah for kings. That when would you begin to go ahead and count the new year for kings? When would kings count their reigns? Ultimately, from Nisan. The Baal Shem Tov says, everyone knows that every Jew is a melech. Every Jew is a king. Every Jew is a king. So today is Rosh Hashanah l'malachim, is a new beginning for every single one of us, a new beginning for every single melech, for every single king. And I would say that it's a Rosh Chodesh that allows us to be the kings that we are truly capable of becoming, especially in these times. A new start, a new beginning, a new day, a new month, and really a brand new year. May we zoche Mirza Hashem to make the most of this brand new beginning, and Mirza Hashem we zoche to make the most of it together. A good chodesh. Shkayach Maishi is going to lead us from beginning to end this morning. And Maishi, and we'll say we're starting a little bit later actually, so that Mirza Hashem we will make Vasikin this morning. With that, I'll give it to Maishi.